And I'd like to welcome us, I'd like all of us actually to welcome Pastor Brian up to the platform this morning to speak to us on 1 Corinthians 13. Could you just give him a round? Come on, brother.
Pastor Brian, huh? I've been promoted.
Yeah, elder. The same word.
Like Scott said, I am not the normal guy. If you're new with us today, then I'm not the normal guy, so please come back next week. Please come back and see him preach before you judge the church. But and if you have any complaints, make sure that you send those to chris@lbac.org. I'm Brian Nastasi. I am an elder here. And I'm happy to speak with you guys today. If you don't recognize me, I've been here, 11-ish years, 12, something like that, 11-ish. So, started as the youth pastor here, and I've been on various different committees and boards and things like that along the way. So, happy to be here with you guys. Before we look at our passage today, let's get a little context of where we've been. Pull up the slide there of the timeline that we've been looking at. So this is the overview of 1 Corinthians that's put out by the Bible Project. Chris has kind of referenced this at different times to kind of get our bearings of where we're at. And right now we are in chapter 13 on 11 to 14 right there. Or right in the midst of 11 to 14 right there. And this is talking about the gatherings, okay, the gatherings of the church, talking about orderly meetings, talking about don't be a distraction to others, preserving unity in the body, building one another up in love, talking about spiritual gifting. Okay, these are all concepts that he's kind of hashing out in this time period or in this section here. And so our passage today falls in the midst of that. So in the honor of God's word, if you would please stand as we read the passage, which is, I'm going to start in actually chapter 12, verse 31, the end of that, and that's going to kind of lead into our passage. 12:31b says, "And I will show you a still more excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends." You may be seated. So in chapter 12, verse 31, and there kind of leads into chapter 13, Paul says, he will show them a more excellent way in comparison to their elevating of spiritual gifts, of trying to compete with one another and say that their spiritual gift is greater than their brother's. Paul says, I'm going to show you a more excellent way. And that's what he leads into with chapter 13. When I saw most excellent way, I thought, okay, this is the way. If you're a Star Wars nerd, you may think of Mandalorian like I did when I thought of the way. Do you have the like title slide on that? So I thought of this is the way, and then when I saw excellent, or when I thought of excellent, I had to think of Bill and Ted's excellent adventure. So I put those together, and that's my title slide today. So Paul tries to diffuse the conflict among the Corinthians as he's been dealing with the spiritual gifts and the elevating of one spiritual gift or another. It has created disunity in the church. And so that's the problem that he's addressing here. And he's going to be talking about that with his exhortation to love. He said, or the question is not which gift is most beneficial or stimulating or spiritual. It is instead, is love radiated in expressing these gifts? Are you demonstrating God's love as you are expressing those gifts? Are you using God's power through you in love, or are you just using your personal talents? More important than all those gifts is love. Okay, more important than any of the gifts that the Corinthians were elevating is love. So, chapter 13 begins with talking about the necessity of love. So, first section here, he's going to deal with the necessity of love, the importance of love, that love is a necessary element. That if we don't have love, everything else is meaningless. He's going to highlight the difference between the Corinthians and how the Corinthians were championing, elevating certain spiritual gifts as evidence of God working through them, as evidence of their spirituality. That because I speak in tongues, God is using me, is speaking through me, and I am spiritual. Because I prophesy, I am more spiritual than you are. And so that created a competition. It created disunity. It made some members of the body feel lesser than others, as we just saw in chapter 12, kind of dealing with the different parts of the body and giving each their own space, that each, all parts of the body are supposed to be there together, and none of them are better than the other. So the Corinthians, as Paul goes on in verse 1, he starts off talking about speaking in tongues, and in verse 1, the Corinthians speak in tongues, but at the same time, they're at least tolerating, if not endorsing, illicit sexuality. They're dealing with greed, they're dealing with idolatry. These are all things that Paul has already addressed at different times in the book. They spout wisdom and knowledge. Okay, in verse 2, it's going to talk about using wisdom and knowledge as a spiritual gift, and that was something that they were really proud of in the Corinthian church, of elevating wisdom and knowledge. But at the same time, they're speaking out against Paul's message of a risen, crucified Messiah. So they're using their wisdom in poor ways. In chapter 8, we are told how they were using their knowledge to destroy weaker brothers. It uses the word destroy, that they were destroying people in their church with their knowledge, with their wisdom. That's not a loving behavior in a church. And so Paul is addressing some of those things. They have a spiritual appearance. They look like they are a spiritual group of people that is using all these miraculous gifts, and yet they are not really spirit filled. Paul is making the point here that they thought of themselves as being people that are spirit filled because they are using those gifts. They're speaking in tongues and they're using wisdom and knowledge and faith. They appear that way, but Paul is making the point that they're missing the key ingredient. They're missing love in that demonstration of those gifts. Without these gifts, without love, all these gifts are useless. They're all pointless. They're all meaningless. Only when exercised with love are they useful for building up the church. Those gifts are supposed to be for the betterment of the church. They're supposed to be used in conjunction with one another for the betterment of the church, for the building up of our body. And if we don't have love in the demonstration of those gifts, then we're failing at that. We're not building up our body, and we're not going to be able to use those gifts to build up the body. So in verse 1, he says, he says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. So this noisy gong or clanging cymbal is an empty or hollow sound, a meaningless noise. Often this kind of talking about a clanging cymbal is associated with pagan cults and their worship. When I was in Japan last year, we went to a lot of different shrines, and they talked to us about when you go to the shrine, you the way you pray at the shrine, you have to start by clapping your hands because you have to wake the god up. Okay, in order for him to hear your prayers, you have to wake him up. You have to make a noise to wake him up. And there was that element to that in playing a loud noise or banging a noise, a gong, to make yourself heard, so that the gods would hear you. Paul may be implying also the bronze jars that were placed around an auditorium to help amplify the sound. That was the early amplification system that they used at that time, and they just reverberated. They make a reverberation of that noise. They aren't a musical noise. It's just a loud noise. And so Paul is making the point here that you're just making a bunch of noise. You're not making music. You're making noise. Without love, I produce nothing of value. So his point here is that without love, I produce nothing of value. I'm just making noise. It's not music. It's just noise. Love is not an idea. It's not a feeling or a motivating factor for behavior. It is the behavior. To love is to act. Anything short of action is not love at all. Love is not a separate gift or expression, but is the primary motivation for the exercise of spiritual gifts. Love is as love does. Love is an action word, and what we're going to see in a little bit later on is Paul's going to use a lot of action words. He's going to use verbs to describe love, because love is active. Love is an action. It is a verb. In verse 2, Paul emphasizes three gifts in prophecy, one that was elevated, that he even elevated as being an important gift in the community. Knowledge is one of the Corinthians' favorite, as we already talked about, and faith are three different gifts that he's going to be talking about. And their knowledge was leading to pride. And as we talked about, the destruction of a brother or sister for whom Christ died in chapter 8, they're using their knowledge to elevate themselves over one another. Their wisdom led to quarrels and rivalry, led to envy and bitterness and strife between each other as they competed with one another. The possession of spiritual gifts is not the sign of the Spirit, but loving others as Christ loved us, that's the sign of the Spirit. Without love, I am of no value, Paul says. Without love, I am of no value. So first he says, without love, I produce nothing of value. Then he says, without love, I am of no value. And then he's going to go on in verse 3. He's going to say, if I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Speaking in tongues, prophesying, using wisdom, having faith, charitable giving, and offering ourselves a sacrifice, all of those things, they're good things. A lot of those things bring benefit to the people that receive them. You know, giving away to charity, obviously that has a benefit to those who receive that. But Paul is saying that to us, it benefits us nothing. Doing all those good things don't bring any benefit to us if we don't have love. It just becomes a religious performance. Paul presents himself as an example of offering his body up as a sacrifice. He talks repeatedly about his sacrifice and the various things that he endured with his message. Even the ultimate sacrifice of martyrdom is meaningless if it's done without love. Paul's model for self-sacrifice is Christ. He's referencing Christ as the ultimate example. Love is not presented in contrast to spiritual gifts. Rather, love is presented with absolute supremacy and the necessity to be a follower of Christ at all. If you don't have love, are you really a follower of Christ? Paul's point overall here is that such an action by one who is not otherwise characterized by love, by the love that he's going to describe in the next few verses, is of no benefit at all to the giver. Maybe a benefit to the receiver, but is bringing no benefit to themselves. So in this section, Paul makes the point that love is a necessity. That without love, none of these things have any sort of meaning. Without love, they produce nothing of value. Without love, I am of no value. Without love, I gain no value. We could even argue that the inverse is true. That with love, I produce something of value. That with love, I am of value. With love, I gain something of value. Are we guilty of doing good things, but with a bad attitude? Are we guilty of becoming too proud of the good things that we do? Are we guilty of comparing our actions to the actions of others and judging them? If so, this may not just be for the Corinthians. the transition, as we now move on, what is love? So now the question is, okay, without love, this is all meaningless. Well, what is love? What does that look like? Before we see Paul's answer, let's look at what our culture tells us and says love is in this video. So clearly that makes the point then. Love hurts. love bites. kind of paints a bleak picture of love in some of those. Love is a battlefield. There are some bleak pictures there, but love is more than a feeling. I will give it there. Love is more than a feeling. I wouldn't say that love is all that we need, but love is a necessary component. But the character of love, Paul is now going to shift towards describing what this love looks like. And he's not just writing a hymn about love, or this is not a standalone side thing that he's now going to talk about love. This is all in connection to what he's been talking about. Is one thought. It's not a separate thing here. We often hear this passage read at weddings or things like that, and it's an exhortation to love your spouse, and that's not really the context here that is engaged in, but certainly we can use that. But this is the context is more in relation to the church, love in the church, loving our brothers and sisters in the church, and bringing unity in the church. So the character of love here, Paul is going to kind of personify love to show its superior acts. And he's, as I said, not going to use adjectives. He's going to use verbs. He's going to use 15 different verbs to describe love in 3 verses. Love is both dynamic and active. It is, it must be shown. He's going to give pictures of what this looks like, and it can be defined only by what it does and does not do. Saying love is a many splendored thing doesn't cut it. You know, that doesn't tell us anything about what love is. You gotta tell us by showing us, by telling us what love does or what love does not do. This is not a standalone, as I said. This is part of that context. And he's specifically tailoring these comments about love to some of the issues that the Corinthians were having, to highlight that. So he's highlighting their lack of love with each of these things. When he says love is patient, it's because they were expressing their lack of patience. And so each one of these, most of these verbs are specifically calling out things that were problems in the Corinthian church. So they are impatient and unkind. They were filled with jealousy. They were vainglorious. They were puffed up or proud. They insisted on their own way. They were cantankerous and resentful, keeping record of wrongs. They rejoiced in wrong rather than right. While Paul is praising love, he is at the same time blaming the Corinthians for their lack of love, for their unloving behavior. And so he's saying the real problems that they're having in their church are all boiling down to love. Love is at the core of that. While this is written to the Corinthians, I think these are certainly issues that we can relate to. Any gathering, any church is going to have these issues with unloving behavior at times. And we all need these reminders to remind ourselves to be loving, even in the midst of others' provocation. So first of all, in verse 4, he is now going to talk about what love is. And he starts off with love is patient and love is kind. So here he uses two positive expressions of love. Okay, these are the two more positive ones, and then he's going to use more negative of what love is not. But here he's using two positive expressions of love. And the implication is that this is how God's people are supposed to be toward one another. First of all, patience. Another word for that is forbearance. It is a passive expression of love. It is long-suffering. We are called to be lovingly patient, even And the word forbearance gets at this idea, even when we are being provoked, even when we're justified in our anger, we are called to patience. Forbearance is demonstrated by God in his holding back of divine wrath toward human rebellion. He's perfectly justified in divine wrath because we have done wrong. But God still is patient with us. And in that same way, we're called to patience even when the other party has done something wrong. Even when they have offended us, we're still called to be patient with them. You might be provoked by your coworkers. I know I, as a teacher, am sometimes provoked by my students in my classroom. I have, at times, they make me want to pull my hair out if I had any hair. I work with sophomores and are mostly sophomores in my class, and sometimes that is a challenge. And just like last week, I had one of those days where it's just a lot of issues in one class period, and one kid went to the bathroom and was gone for like 20 minutes, came back and didn't have the bathroom pass because he had dropped it in the toilet and lost it. And other kids had earphones in, and I had to repeatedly tell them to take earphones out and put their cell phones away, and there were lots of distractions in the class. And it was a frustrating class period, and I had every right to be angry with them, and to lose my patience in that. They were provoking that. But I tried to keep my calm, and I don't think I was doing a great job of that. But after the class, I had a student come up to me. He's a special needs student, ADHD kid, recently put him in my class. They're kind of trying him out in a regular general ed class, because he's normally in a lot of special education classes. He comes up to me and he says, "Mister, you're a nice teacher." And I was, moved by that. I didn't necessarily think that I was exemplifying a lot of patience. I was starting feeling like I was losing my patience in that. But he was reminding me that he was watching. That he was seeing how I was dealing with all the distractions and all the things that were going on in the classroom, and that spoke to him. He doesn't say much in class, but he stayed after class to tell me that. So you might be provoked by a family member. Thanksgiving coming up, a lot of you are going to be around family members that may drive you nuts at times. They may provoke you. Can we be patient with them even when provoked? Even when he starts it, can we be patient, little one? Can we be patient with your little brother? Even when he starts it, can you be patient with that? Sometimes we may even be justified in our anger. We may be perfectly within our rights to have righteous anger raining down on them through us. But can we be patient? Can we choose to not be angry in that moment? You might be provoked to anger even by somebody in this congregation. Maybe it's another member of Long Beach Alliance. Can you be patient even with them in the face of provocation? Even if you're justified in your anger, even if they did something that is justifiably upsetting, can you still be patient with other members of the body? Second thing Paul talks about is love is kind. Kindness. Here is an active expression of love. First, he did a passive expression of love. This is an active. God's kindness is found in the thousandfold expressions of divine mercy. Kindness recognizes that everyone carries a heavy load. The kindness of Christians in the second century so surprised their pagan counterparts that according to Tertullian, They called Christians Christiani, which means made up of mildness and kindness, rather than Christiani, for Christian. They associated kindness with Christians because of their behavior. The picture of kindness, recognizing that everyone carries a heavy load, stood out to me. Sometimes we don't know what others are going through in their lives. I have a player on my football team who needs positive affirmation all the time, and he does things that are not the right thing to do a lot of the times, but he needs a lot of positive affirmation. And I found out that his father had passed away in the last year, and I recognized that my role in that is that he needs a father figure to give him positive feedback. And I realized that, I came to that realization this year that I am that father figure to him. To when I am coaching, can I speak into that? Can I give him that positive feedback? Can I find something, even when he makes a mistake, can I find something to encourage him about with that? Because he needs that. He needs that positive encouragement. And I didn't know about that when I first had him on the team. I had another one of my football players who I found out we were frustrated that he was kind of flaky and wasn't coming around. Later we found out, oh, he's homeless. His dad lost his job and he's been living in his car. That explains his flakiness. Instead of getting angry with him, how can we help? How can we reach out to him? Another one of my football players was always being late and was being tardy and getting called up because of his tardiness and failing his classes because he was always late to school. But then realizing, oh, he's late because he doesn't have parents. He's living with his uncle on the couch and he's walking his niece to school every day. So because there's no one else to do that. And so that's why he's late. So sometimes you don't know what other people might be going through. So kindness is loving others, not knowing what they may be going through, not knowing the burdens that they may be under. Love does not. So then Paul's going to talk about the things that love does not do. It's going to be seven different verbs about what love does not do. Love does not envy. We are not filled with jealousy. This refers to the strife and rivalry that was going on in the Corinthian church. Their zeal for spiritual gifts may have contributed to their envy. Do not envy. Do not compete with others. He then says, love does not boast. It is not ostentatious or boasting or behaving as a braggart or a windbag. It suggests self-centered actions to call attention to oneself. This sort of boasting, it wounds others as they are put down by that. You can't boast in that way and still be loving. Love is not arrogant or proud or puffed up. This word is used exclusively in this letter to refer to the Corinthians themselves of being puffed up, inflated, and that pride was inflating them or puffing them up. The list of things that love does and does not do corresponds to the Christian's experience of God's own gracious saving activity. God is patient with us. He is kind to us. God does not tolerate unrighteousness. God does not hold our sins against us or record our sins against us. Christ's sacrifice seeks the advantage of others rather than his own affairs. He goes on, love is not rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. Love is not rude. It does not behave unseemly, shamefully, disgracefully. Paul talks about a couple of instances in chapter 11 and chapter 5 of people behaving indecently or rude to one another. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not self-seeking. Agape love seeks the good of others, not the good of oneself. Love is not irritable. It is not cantankerous. It is love is not easily provoked to anger by others and does not provoke anger in others with its irritability. This is, again, kind of circling back to that forbearance of holding back our anger in that irritability. Love is not resentful. We keep no record of wrongs. Does not think on it or take notice of it. The images of keeping records of wrongs with a view to paying back that injury. If somebody offends us, then I will keep record of that. I will write that down in my book of wrongs, and I will seek to repay that at some point down the road. Perhaps someone in this room said something that offended you, an insensitive remark forever recorded in your book of wrongs. Can you let that go? Can you keep no record of wrongs? Paul goes on. Paul contrasts evil and truth in verse 6. A love-filled person refuses to take delight in evil. Since the word injustice occurs in Paul's remarks on lawsuits, he may be referencing the way that the people were defrauding other Christians in pagan courts. That there is not injustice among you. Love rejoices with the truth and does not suppress the truth, does not exchange it for a lie or do anything against the truth or become upset when faced with the truth, no matter how uncomfortable it is. Don't be deceived by evil. Embrace the truth. And verse 7 says, love always. There's four verbs here, each with the object of all things. This brings this section to a little bit of a summary and a conclusion. Love bears all things, or always perseveres through challenges. Love believes all things, or love always trusts. Love hopes all things. Or love always hopes. Love never loses hope that God's goodness will prevail. For love, there is no hopeless case. And love endures all things. It refers to love's ability to hold out enduring trouble and affliction. Love has no limits. Love never tires of support, never loses faith, never exhausts hope, never gives up, never surrenders. The Corinthians and all believers should above all make love their aim. And at the same time, in that context, eagerly desire the gifts of the Spirit, but always with a view towards the benefit of others. How can those gifts benefit others? And Paul concludes this section and leads into the next part that we'll save for next time. As he says, as he talks about the permanence of love. That love will remain even after all things have come to their proper end. Spiritual gifts are given to us in this present age, but love endures forever. Love is eternal. Paul attests to the permanence of love in comparison to the spiritual gifts that are prominent in Corinth, especially prophecy, knowledge, and tongues. Since love endures forever, it is superior to these imperfect gifts, no matter how impressive they might seem in the present. Love never ceases to exist, even in heaven, but these gifts are not eternal. As I close, I want to just look back at John chapter 13, verse 34 through 35, as after washing his disciples' feet, Jesus said this, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Church, if we love one another, and I know that it has been said of our church that we are a loving church, if we love one another, that will be a testament to others, to non-believers, of what God is doing in our church. So love each other well. Be patient with each other. Be kind to one another. Keep no record of wrongs. Bear with each other. Can we love each other well in this church? And in so doing, can we demonstrate God's power through us? God, thanks for this message. Thanks for this exhortation to love one another. God, I pray that you would help each one of us to be patient with one another, to be kind to one another, to seek to love each other well, and be gracious with one another, even when we are provoked, even when we are offended. God, I pray that you would use us as your arms and legs to love other members of our body and those around us. In your name we pray. Amen.